Welcome back. You're listening to Policy and Pino on Rhode Island Public Radio, a discussion series of timely topics hosted in partnership with the Providence Athenaeum. We're talking about the changing energy system that powers our homes and businesses, and we're in front of a live audience at the Save the Bay Center in Providence. Earlier in the program, we heard about how natural gas is now a larger slice of our energy mix that's prompted dramatic shifts away from oil and coal, and it's also prompted opposition to new natural gas projects. Many of our political leaders support these projects because they say we're facing an energy crisis in the region. I'd like to hear from each of you. Are we facing an energy crisis? Wheezy, Nora, we'll begin with you.
Sure. So from ISO New England's perspective, we're facing a reliability risk. We would really frame it in that way. Our studies and operational experiences have shown that the region does need additional natural gas infrastructure, but that can come in many different forms, whether that's incremental pipeline capacity, additional LNG supplies, natural gas-fired generators adding dual-fuel capabilities, so when natural gas pipelines are constrained and they aren't able to access natural gas, they can switch over to oil and run on oil. And then there's, you know, a wires option as well, you know, potentially bringing more energy down from our neighbors in eastern Canada, hydropower resources coming down from eastern Canada. So in all likelihood, it'll be a combination of all these different options to meet this reliability risk.
And when you say reliability risk, what does that mean?
You know, during the coldest winter days when it's, you know, minus 10 degrees outside, we're seeing the demand for natural gas spike. So, you know, homes and businesses are trying to heat their homes and businesses, and natural gas-fired generators are trying to generate electricity. We've added a ton of natural gas-fired capacity over the last decade, and so many homes and businesses have converted to natural gas. Over that same time period, there's been no real additions to the interstate pipeline system. So we're seeing constraints on the natural gas pipeline system on the coldest winter days, because all that natural gas is being gobbled up by homes and businesses to heat for home heating. Very little, if any, is left over for natural gas-fired generators. And so oftentimes during the winter when the ISO calls on these resources to run, to produce electricity, they're not able to run. They're not able to access gas. And so when such a huge segment of our generation fleet isn't able to run and isn't able to respond to our dispatch, to our electronic signal saying, please generate electricity, that presents a reliability risk.
So I've heard people say that we need this energy during the hottest days of the year and then the coldest days of the year. And that just adds up to a couple of hours or a few days a year. So why not use solar or wind energy to meet those demands during that time?
Well, you know, the reality is that renewables are intermittent. And at this time, we don't have any utility scale or grid scale storage that's cost effective and on the market today. So with these resources being intermittent, we do have to rely on more conventional resources when the sun isn't shining or the wind isn't blowing. And for an example, winter peaks. So when we see the highest peak in the wintertime is often in the evening around 6 or 7 o'clock at night when people are getting home and cooking their dinner and turning on their microwave. At that time, the sun's down, and there's no power to be generated from solar PV scattered across the region. So we do have to rely on resources where, you know, we control their output during those times.
Abigail, Anthony, do we have an energy crisis in the region?
New England's energy system is at a very important juncture, but we are not facing a crisis. And one thing that I would like to point out that is unique about the conversation that we're having about natural gas right now is that typically natural gas pipelines are built by private developers who take on the risk and they weigh the different market forces and decide whether or not to make the investment in building the pipeline based on economics. In the case that New England states have been discussing in recent years, they're actually looking to ratepayers, that's all of us, all the homes and businesses who pay for electricity, to fund this pipeline. So the risk is much higher because our dollars are on the line, not a private developer. So we feel that in this extreme circumstance, this requires the highest level of due diligence to ensure that there are not lower risk cleaner and lower cost alternatives to building this pipeline if public funds are going to be put behind it.
Remind us where this pipeline proposal is.
There's been several pipeline proposals, and the landscape of proposals keeps changing, so I don't want to point to one in particular.
There is a proposal by Spectra Energy, National Grid, and Eversource that would expand the Algonquin pipeline, the existing Algonquin line, and that, I believe, runs through Connecticut, maybe a part of Massachusetts and Rhode Island. So that is one proposal that's out there.
And Wheezy did mention, you listed a lot of different alternatives that we can explore to having pipeline capacity: energy efficiency, storage, backup other fuels, backup oil. Even just using more oil for the short term is a lot lower of a climate risk than locking into a long-term commitment to natural gas.
Danny, from the state's perspective, are we having an energy crisis?
So I think that Rhode Island and New England states in general are facing some of the highest energy prices in the country. And I think you've heard throughout this presentation that there's a lot of work going on to try to address that problem from all angles. We're using all the tools in our toolbox, including energy efficiency, where Rhode Island invests in all cost-effective energy efficiency that we have available. We're pursuing a really ambitious program for local renewable energy development, and we're seeing the results of that, so we're really happy about that. And then I think that from the administration's perspective, we want to be looking at all options for trying to, make our economy and our energy prices affordable. So we have been looking at regional solutions as well, and includes infrastructure solutions. And the New England governors, have been partnering on this initiative to explore those options for a couple of years. That does include looking at options for regional renewable energy as well. So it's not just natural gas solutions, but renewable energy. We recently participated in a multi-state clean energy RFP with Connecticut.
RFP.
And request for proposals with Connecticut, Massachusetts, to see whether we could really leverage our collective power, purchasing power as multiple states, to get some large and cost-effective clean energy proposals that would supplement all the work that we're doing here at a local level. So yeah, I think that our perspective is that we absolutely are committed to the clean energy solutions that we're supporting right now and in the future. And we also want to be keeping a really close eye on how we can deal with some of these really high energy prices that are a reality that they're faced by homeowners and businesses every day. So
there's a lot of controversy over the proposal to build a power plant in Burrville. To each of you, I know Wheezy from the ISO New England has said, you don't take a position, but I will ask each of you again, do you support it or oppose it?
So this is an easy one for the ISO. We don't support or oppose any particular generator proposals in the region, so I'll leave it at that.
Do we need it?
Well, that resource participated in our most recent forward capacity auction, and they did clear the auction. So they
participated in the market that you... When you're buying power for the future.
That's exactly right. So we also administer a forward capacity market where we're procuring the resources needed in 3 years' time. It's to ensure those resources will be there, in 3 years from now, and we can plan accordingly if there aren't enough resources.
So are you saying that because you accepted it, it's what we need in our energy mix?
I would say that resource took on a capacity supply obligation. They offered into that market at a competitive price, which cleared our auction. And so they're saying to us, we will be available to you to produce electricity beginning June 1, 2019.
Abigail, does the Acadia Center support or oppose that project proposal?
So, I would say that the Burrville Power Plant proposal actually tells us something pretty interesting about the larger pipeline debate. So as I explained a little bit earlier, that proponents of the publicly funded pipeline say that we need to fund this pipeline in order to provide that capacity to the power plant.
Let's break that down a little bit. So
as Wheezy described, power plants need pipeline capacity. Proponents of the natural gas pipeline are claiming that the public needs to build the pipeline for power plants. the Invenergy power plant has procured its own pipeline capacity.
They've secured
their own capacity without any public funding, without any public involvement. And I think this is an example that really undermines the arguments for publicly funded natural gas pipeline. This is a power plant that has gone out to the market and procured its own supply without putting ratepayers at risk. They are taking on all the risk themselves, which is how it should be in a competitive market.
So am I hearing you say that you do support it? Or
No. So let me be clear. And this is another point I want to make, which is if we continue with business as usual in New England at our current level of natural gas use for heating and power generation industry, the emissions that will be produced will exceed the region's entire greenhouse gas budget by 2050. This means that without any increase in pipeline capacity or any new gas power plants, natural gas alone will eat up the region's entire greenhouse gas budget, leaving no emissions left for all the other parts of our economy, transportation, heating oil, propane. If we build more pipelines, if we have more power plants, we are going to be over our total greenhouse gas emissions budget in 2015, and Rhode Island will not achieve our legally binding greenhouse gas emissions constraints.
Danny Musher with the Office of Energy Resources.
Sure.
I just want to say the governor does support this power plant proposal. Does your Office of Energy Resources also support it? Do you have to be on her page?
We work for the governor. She's my boss's boss. I would just say that the governor and her team are closely monitoring the process. We do have a procedural docket that goes through what's called the Energy Facility Siting Board, so that there's a board at the state level that considers all large-scale power plant proposals. And so I'm sure many of you in the room are familiar with this, but for those who aren't, a proposal like the one in Burrillville comes forward. It undergoes a thorough review for reliability need, economic need, health and environmental impacts. And so that process is underway. And we're going to be learning about the outcomes of that over the coming months. So I think that's something that we want to pay close attention to. At the same time, the administration is really keen to hear and listen to the concerns of the community as well related to this power plant. And so I think that's the where we stand on the power plant proposal there.
So
the other thing that I would just add, I think it was Wheezy brought up that we do have this forward capacity auction proposal. So
that's the market It's the market where we buy our future energy.
It's the market where we buy our future energy.
Okay.
There you go.
Okay.
And so right now when we look at the queue for different resources and technologies that are interested in applying and entering, it's all natural gas and renewable energy like wind, primarily wind. And so this is, the private market at work with resources coming forward. If we had looked decades ago, it might have been coal and oil, but now we see natural gas and renewables, and that'll change again going into the future. And we're, seeing that evolving before our very eyes.
Building on a point that Danny made, and he mentioned the interconnection queue. And so I was just going to explain the ISO interconnection queue. So ISO New England, we administer an interconnection queue where any generators that would like to interconnect to the system, they have to come to us to be studied to make sure that they can interconnect to the system reliably. And right now we have roughly 13,700 megawatts of proposed generation in the region. And about 62% of those proposals are coming from natural gas-fired plants, 31% is coming from wind, and the balance is 7% roughly coming from a mix of solar, grid-scale storage, 94 megawatts of grid-scale storage. That's the first time grid-scale storage has entered our queue, and some other renewable resources as well. So I was just going to elaborate on what's on the horizon. Not all 13,700 megawatts will be built, but it's a good indication of what might be coming. More gas and more renewables.
So, Danny, I think that a lot of people's concern is that because your boss is supporting this project is not going through an authentic review. So what can you say about that?
I would say that I I think it's going through an authentic review. I mean, so, you know, the way that the process is set up is we have the Energy Facility Siting Board. This is not something that our office runs. You know, they issue an order for all state agencies to be weighing in. That includes our office. You know, we're called on to provide a couple of different analyses regarding the project. None of the results of that have come out yet, so right. I think we need to see what the results are. It's not just our office. It's environment, health, a number of different studies need to be done. And I know on our part, these are complicated issues, so it's not just our staff here looking at them. You know, we're bringing on consultant support to try to understand this, but we obviously want to be making a decision that makes sense and conforms to all the requirements of the process.
Unfortunately, we're out of time for this portion of the program. We're going to continue our discussion with a Q&A afterward. That's it for our Policy and Pino on Rhode Island Public Radio. I'd like to thank our guests, Wheezy Nwora with the ISO New England, Abigail Anthony with the Acadia Center, and Danny Musher from the Office of Energy Resources. A special thanks to Save the Bay for hosting us tonight, Christina Bavilacqua, and the Providence Athenaeum for partnering with us. Rhode Island Public Radio's news director is Elizabeth Harrison. Our audio engineer is Mike LaMontia, and our general manager is Tori Malatia. A big thanks to our wonderful audience, and thank you for listening. I'm Ambar Espinosa. This is Rhode Island Public Radio, Rhode Island's NPR. So I just...